I'm speaking today with Joe Jaworski, who is running for mayor of Galveston. That election is coming up in about 2 weeks on May 8th. Early voting is set to start. Joe, tell me, why are you running for this office?
Well, good morning, Cuff. I'm running for this office because in Galveston, we have to be very concerned about the stories our children are going to tell about their upbringing. In the next couple of years, the story is going to be told about Galveston. Are we going to make it, or are we going to continue in this sort of state of ragged glory? My children are 5 and 10. When I finished the state Senate campaign, it obviously hurt to lose, but it didn't take long to find a new passion, which was dealing with UTMB and the fact that the University of Texas Regents had fired about 3,500 of them, of the employees. At that point, I realized the greatest job before me is, of course, repairing my home from Ike damage, but also getting invested and involved in Galveston's recovery. The mayor, Lyda Ann Thomas, is retiring after term limits. My wife and I did a little debrief after the Senate race, and she said, "Look, Joe, I know you want to serve. That's clear. Why don't you serve right here in town? Serve your family. Serve your island. You never wanted to be mayor, but look at the condition this Galveston island is in." At that point, my wife and I made that decision together, and I was all in.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Ike, because obviously that's been, you know, the big thing to affect Galveston. You know, 2 years later, almost 2 years later, where does Galveston stand with Hurricane Ike in terms of recovery, getting people back, getting businesses back? What's the big picture in terms of recovery?
Right. You know, right before the storm, we had somewhere above 60,000 in population. You know, it's almost I guess 19 months post-storm, and our population is down 15 to 20%. The recovery itself is going along nicely, and Charles, what you'll see in the literally coming months, I mean, as soon as this next mayor, myself hopefully, takes office, you're going to see the federal money actually start coming in. So recovery money starts with $267 million allocated from the feds down to the state.
Was this specific to Ike, or was this like ARRA money?
Well, it's actually Ike money.
Okay.
And we were getting some American Recovery Act money as well for shovel-ready projects. But the fact is, this $267 million was specifically for housing, and I think $160 million of the 267 is for housing, and about $107 million is for non-housing or public infrastructure. And so recovery is going to really step it up here in about a month. The city has hired Camp Dresser McGee to be the contractor to administer this federal money. It's not enough to simply receive it and then spend it. You have to account for it, because there will be heavy auditing. But the good news is, Charles, this $267 million is going to buy us a new wastewater treatment plant to the tune of about $80 million, and it's going to fix probably about 1,500 to 2,000 homes of people who simply didn't have insurance but who qualify under financial need analysis to get their homes fixed. These are people that live in their homes, own their homes, and even 19, 20 months after the storm still haven't had a chance to get them fixed. And that's just the first bucket of money. So we should be getting a second bucket of even a larger amount, which would take us past the $500 million mark. When it's all said and done, we'll be looking at over $1 billion worth of recovery money, and that's going to take place over the next 2 years.
Okay. So obviously, you know, Galveston is in the process of rebuilding, and as you say, the city has lost population. But, you know, part of what it needs to do is move forward and not just, you know, fix the stuff that's there, but try to bring new people to the island and grow. How do you do that? How do you convince people who aren't currently living in Galveston that this is a good place to live and do business?
Right. You know, the good news about a hurricane, as painful as it was for all of us, is that it hits your reset button. And this was not just a average 20-year hurricane like we sometimes get, Carla, Alicia, etc. This is a 100-year storm. And the flood was the most unique component of it. But you're right. Galveston cannot continue doing business the way it was doing, even before the storm, Charles. So here's our opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity for a new mayor to give a new energy, a new vision, and that's sort of our motto, new energy and vision for Galveston. I think that the way we do that, and it sounds so simple, but let's face it, first appearances are everything. We got to improve the appearance of the island. And I'm talking about streets, lights, signs. I'm talking about weeds growing up through the broken sidewalks. Basically, that state of ragged glory that I was talking about. I mean, everybody loves Galveston. We love to go to the small town, the hominess of it. We love the breeze. We love the beach. But, you know, you ask 9 out of 10 people to go down there, and they think, God, what a shame, you know. This place has so much potential. Well, what we're going to do, this next city council, is come face-to-face with our city manager, because unlike Houston, we have a city manager form of government. And the beauty of it is, if we have the political will to do this, we simply review the city manager every 6 months on objective criteria that all spell one thing, improved quality of life. So how much litter have you picked up? You know, measure that every 2 weeks, review it every 6 months. How many streets have you paved? How many curbs and sidewalks have you reconstructed? How well is the sales tax revenue coming? How about the population? I think another thing to do is to focus a big project and make a win out of it. Seawall needs help, but it's so diffuse and long. We'll get there. Broadway, same thing, but downtown Galveston. Now, downtown Galveston is a real destination, Charles, and that is something that's compact enough to where if we put some of this hurricane money and some of the ARA money into it, American Recovery Act money, then we can actually create a destination that people in Houston will be so impressed by. And really, I think that without selling out Galveston's soul, but really improving it, since we are always a town of immigrants anyway, the fact is, our proximity to Houston is what's going to save us.
Okay. Now, with Ike, there are still a number of unresolved issues you referred to related to insurance. You know, this is more of a state issue in terms of, you know, the Windstorm Insurance Agency. What do you want to see the state do to make it right for people who are living in Galveston and, you know, who need insurance going forward?
Well, you know, you're right. The state and Galveston have had a passive-aggressive relationship for a long time, and it came to a head with the funding for UTMB, University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. I think we've got that going in the right direction. I'd say windstorm rates and beach erosion are a close second and third. So what I'd like to see for the state's work on windstorm is to perhaps roll flood and windstorm together. Now, that involves the federal government because flood is obviously a FEMA function. But we saw what happened in Louisiana where one insurer would play off the other one. Well, that's flood. Well, that's wind. Well, the same thing's happening here. And Galveston is a barrier island, and all it takes is a strong windstorm to push a wall of water into your municipality. Our seawall did a great job. The flooding didn't happen on the seawall side. The flooding happened on the bay side. So, you know, that brings up the Ike Dyke and whether we do a berm or something like that. So I think, you know, state issues are keeping UTMB healthy and funded in Galveston. And in exchange, Galveston does its part by, you know, creating a hospital district and willing to be taxed on that, to pitch our money in, to have the philanthropic organization known as the Seeley Smith Foundation, which is wonderfully endowed and gives literally hundreds of millions to UTMB. And then windstorm, you know, beach erosion and flood prevention, I'll call it, because, you know, Ike Dyke is only one option. A berm is another, you know, and other sort of lesser options are on the table. You know, as far as the specific question, windstorm and flood, maybe we need to look at what the Mississippi congressman is talking about and doing a full hazard insurance, wind and flood together.
Okay. You mentioned the Ike Dyke. I was going to ask about that. Do you support that proposal, or do you think there's a different proposal that would work better?
Well, right now, I support investigating it. I think the science is going to tell us within 3 to 5 years whether it's worth it. And when I say science, I mean whether the cost is worth the benefit. Even Bill Merrill, the guy who is the A&M professor in Galveston, who coined the term Ike Dyke and is sort of proposing it, says, look, if the science doesn't support it and the cost to the ecology and the ecosystem is too great, well then, you know, it shouldn't be pursued in that way. But we know it works in Holland, and we know that the Bolivar Roads entrance is the place where it would be. I think a lot of environmentalists in the area are alarmed by it. I think we have to take it, we have to acknowledge that. But right now, we have got to investigate it. And there's a panel that was in Galveston just the other day. Bill King, former judge Bob Eccles, Jim Yarbrough, and several others were there to discuss it.
Okay. One of the things that, one of the other effects of Hurricane Ike was, as we talked about the population decrease, one effect that that had in the legislature was that, you know, the Galveston School District would be allocated less money because there were fewer students. Now, in 2009, the legislature basically allowed Galveston to, you know, count its student population at, I believe, well, pre-Ike levels, 2008 levels. That's going to run out probably in this session. How do you make up for that?
Wow, that's really where we are. Our superintendent just resigned and is taking a job up in North Texas, so we are literally back at ground zero. We have a good board of trustees elected just this last fall, and they're pretty progressive. So what I would tell you, what's going on in Galveston right now is a pretty healthy charter school revolution. They are coming up out of the ground, KIPP, Ambassador, Odyssey, and these schools are doing very well. The actual GISD, Galveston Independent School District, schools are now becoming schools of choice and specialization. I think we could do a little bit of an advertising job right now because there's some real renaissance going on in the Independent School District. Now, population is a problem. We are losing population to League City. I mean, just plain and simple. You know, young families are seeing housing options that they like there, and the schools are perceived as being so much better. I think this is a code, if you will, for poverty. Poverty resistance in Galveston. People see things that look unclean and sort of battered, and they think, hey, I'm voting with my feet. My vision for Galveston over the next 6 years is to do a rapid improvement of the appearance so that that's not an issue. I want the streets and curbs to look pristine. I want the paint to be fresh and the chrome to gleam. And then I think that we can do something to tell people, wait a minute, you can get a really good education in Galveston. And I think finally we've got to get some more housing options. And I'm not talking necessarily about one, you know, economic strata or another. We just have to mow down some of the derelict structures that have been sitting there literally for decades, and then bring in some infill housing from, you know, your favorite home builder, whether it be Perry or, you know, Weekly or maybe others, and they can mock up that sort of vernacular island style. People need to know that they can have the home of their dreams in Galveston and have a good school. You'll have more families coming that way. And that's the message I think I, as mayor, am going to be able to deliver.
And it was just a report on abandoned properties in Galveston. It seemed like the number wasn't quite as high as they thought, but a problem seems to be with absentee landlords. How do you deal with that, and what do you want to see done with a lot of these abandoned properties?
You're right. The Urban Land Institute came down for free about a year ago and said they estimated 7,000 abandoned properties. The city of Galveston actually walked the streets one at a time and came up with about 1,500, which is a bit of a relief. But still, 1,500 is huge when you're talking about, you know, an urban core between 4th and 61st Street. These abandoned properties, many of them can be repaired, but most of them are almost beyond repair. We have three kind of landlords, Charles, that get away with this, or owners. One is the sympathetic grandmother who's, you know, maybe a widow and she lives in this house. Well, we're not going to start with her. Then there's the connected Uber landlord that perhaps, you know, owns 10 to 100 units. maybe we don't start with him either. Here's where we start. The out-of-state absentee landlords that have zero interest in Galveston other than as a real estate investment, and they're not doing a good job of it. There's something called Code 54 that Galveston came up with that renovated the Galveston, the Galvez Mall. And what this does, very simply, is it creates a SWAT team of everything from code enforcement to the fire department, and you just descend on a property and mark it up for everything that's wrong with it, and then use that in a rapid-fire process to transfer ownership. If you're not paying your taxes, you're foreclosed. If you're not curing the blight that you've created, then a lien is put on your property, and if you don't pay that, you're foreclosed. That's where we start. We start with people that have no political connection. They're simply violating the standards that Galveston should employ. It's my hope that we create a new Galveston standard, of quality of life, and that we start with those absentee landlords and transfer ownership of those properties. If they can be rescued by someone who wants to rebuild, great. If they need to be raised, let's raise them.
Okay. Galveston County, as you know, is currently creating a rail district. Partly to ensure that the north end of the county gets some transportation money that would go to Houston otherwise, but it's also talk about building a freight rail. A commuter rail line from Galveston into Houston. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I have, since I ran for the Senate, have been a real strong advocate for commuter rail between Galveston and Houston. So, first off, that's one of my great great goals. And, in fact, on my mayoral campaign literature, I stick my neck out by saying, make commuter rail a reality by 2016. So, just so you know, that's not something I'm passive about. I'm real excited to see that the Galveston and other sort of southeast county and municipalities are creating essentially a governmental entity for collection of revenue and taxes to make sure that Metro isn't the only game in town. Now, I really understand that there's some politics when it comes to which way a commuter line is going to go out of Houston, and I have the deepest respect and look forward to working with Judge Ed Emmett, because I know he's, sort of invested in the Gulf Coast Rail District. Perhaps Galveston can work with that and whatever entity it creates with Galveston County and other cities in the area can work with that, because we have got to make sure that the Southeast Corridor is the one that gets served. The analysis shows in the next 20 to 30 years there's going to be a huge population explosion down that I-45 line. It's already happening, but League City, Clear Lake, Texas City all have great reason to expand. The price is right on the land. UTMB is now creating essentially a satellite campus up in the League City area at Victory Lakes. That in and of itself, to serve two campuses, is a great reason to have commuter rail. So that, Charles, is one of the things I've been telling people who want the inside ball analysis, is that elect me mayor, I want to serve on the Houston-Galveston Area Council Board of Directors again and be a staunch advocate for that entire Southeast Corridor commuter rail line.
I mean, at the Galveston end of that, what do you want to see? Let's say we're a few years ahead.
Right.
The agreement is to do it. Where do you want that line to end, and how do you want it to serve the whole greater Galveston area? I mean, I assume you'll have a terminal at one end, but for that to really be beneficial to a greater area, you'd need walkable area, a walkable community in the area. You might need streetcars or something to connect to it. What's the vision for the Galveston end of that?
The vision is that the actual large commuter train would terminate at the Shern Moody Plaza, which is historically where the trains always stopped, and it's got the Galveston Train Museum there. So that's at 25th and Strand. Right there, literally a 1 minute walk away is your cruise ship. A 50 foot walk away is the trolley line. That we are going to put an intermodal hub there, where buses, trolley, and dare I say jitneys could serve that whole downtown area. We want to get some federal money and invest some of our recovery money into creating a walkable space downtown with shade, amenities, reconstructed streets and curbs, so that downtown becomes a destination. I mean, this ought to be both a commuter rail for people that live and or work in Galveston, who wish to travel, but it also ought to be a destination rail for people like, you know, the Cuffners, who say, hey, let's go out and get dinner in Galveston. It's a Tuesday night. I mean, I know that just sounds so far away right now, but imagine if in 6 years you could say, let's just go down to Galveston and grab dinner tonight, and that train would serve you, and it would be easy to do, and that when you arrive at 25th and Strand, there is a plethora of options in terms of mobilizing, because I want Galveston to be the place where you can leave your car at home.
Okay. One other thing that's going on is a few years ago, the city of Galveston voted to change its way of electing council members. Instead of having all district council members, to have some district council members, two at-large council members, and a mayor. But that was rejected by the Justice Department under President Bush back in 2003. That referendum was passed with a significant majority. Do you think Galveston should pursue trying to get that to happen again?
Well, it's a timely question, because this election in 2 weeks will be the last time we use the lines as they are currently drawn. I mean, regardless whether we stick with a 6th district and one at-large mayor or do something more toward at-large council seats, this is the last time we're using these lines. So we're going to have to redistrict anyway. The population has diminished by 15% to 20%, so it seems like it's time for a serious look at whether we should change. You're right. In 2003, the city of Galveston said by an overwhelming majority, we want 4 districts, 2 at-large council member seats, and 1 at-large mayor, making it a 4-2-1 configuration. Back then, the Department of Justice said, sorry, we won't give you preclearance to do that, even though the people have voted. We're not letting you install that, because it potentially dilutes minority voting strength, and they found it violative of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So, you know, that's the law of the land. Our option at that point would have been to sue the United States of America to overturn that administrative determination. And the cost of that would have been not only economically crippling, but socially crippling. These days, though, with Barack Obama as president, the recent opinion from the United States Supreme Court out of Manor, Texas, where it basically dials back a little bit of that suspicion of the southern states, and the fact that we can still protect minority voting rights in Galveston with 4 districts, spells to me an opportunity here, because it's really about giving more reason to go vote. Right now, if you vote in Galveston, you're voting for 1 council member and 1 mayor. Well, what if you could actually vote for 4 people? Your district council member, 2 at-large council members, and a mayor. I mean, you could involve yourself in hopefully putting a majority of a city council every time you vote. So that is empowering to the voter. And then if you look at the geography of Galveston, 40% of our ad valorem tax base is the West End, west of the end of the seawall. And yet they only get 1 council member. So I'm not suggesting that we, you know, gerrymander the West End, because the population still is rather sparse out there. But the fact is, the value of that land and the interest in its development, I think, militates in favor of more council rather than less council representation. And you can do that with at large. So we don't want to get too internecine and sort of complex in our neighborhood politics. I think everyone is always striving for that, you know, what's best for Galveston, you know, angle. And the best way to guarantee that is at-large representation. But again, as a lawyer and as, you know, someone who understands the moral code of what we all fought for in the 60s, we want to make sure minority voting rights is protected, are protected. And we can do that with a proper district analysis.
Okay. With all the federal money coming in, Galveston will be able to rebuild a lot of its infrastructure in the next couple of years. But of course, you know, with declining population and, you know, abandoned houses and whatnot, and just general economic climate, you know, property tax revenues are down across the state. How does that affect the city's current finances, and what do you see going forward in terms of what needs to be done about that?
Well, we, you know, like I say, we have a unique opportunity for at most the next 3 years, and that will be serious federal money available to us, some of which is funded at 100%, most of which is a match, 90 to 10. In other words, local match is 10%. Charles, there are things that we can fix that we would never have been able to in 20 to 30 years with the way we were going. So what I would say to you is this: we have got to use that money as wisely as possible. You know, spend a buck to make $5, because we can create a cleaner, healthier, more well community. And at the end of this 3-year period, if we play our cards right, anybody in the region is going to come to Galveston and go, "My God, what happened? This place is so clean and well maintained." And of course, what God gave us in the origination of it all—the breeze, the vista, the sea—is always been good. Our problems have all been man-made. This ragged state of affairs is as a result of just not maintaining your infrastructure. Well, we're going to be able to fix all that over the next 2 to 3 years. Streets, drainage, you know, wastewater, you know, water pump stations all the way out to the West End. And what I would tell you is that if we don't take advantage of that and then start selling Galveston so that more of our property winds up on the tax roll than off, well, it's an opportunity not to be missed, and that's what we'll be focusing on.
Okay. As you know, the Texas legislature, when it meets in January, one of the things they'll be considering, again, is gambling, an expansion of gambling, and there has been a proposal to, if that passes and gets approved by the voters, to build a casino on Galveston. What is your position on that?
When I was on city council between 2000 and 2006, before our term limited off, you know, we thought that it was probably going to happen then. So we zoned for it. Seawall, Moody Gardens, and Pelican Island were the preferred locations if it were to happen. Now, there has been this historic split right down the middle, and half the people in Galveston seem to want it, and half think it'll violate our sensibilities. So all we asked for, and what we asked for when I was on council, is legislature, we know you're up there crafting a bill, and you're going to tell us where you're going to put these casinos once it passes a constitutional referendum. All we ask for is a local option vote so that, you know, the Galveston factions, both pro and con, can finally put it to bed. At that point, then I think Galveston could be an outstanding destination for gaming, but it won't be good if it's not seen as the will of the people in Galveston, because I guarantee you, having lived there now for, you know, over 15 years, it will get ugly if there isn't some definitive local vote where people can say, "Hey, the decision's made." I think that there could be even up to 2 casinos in Galveston, and if properly handled, infrastructure issues and the who gets a piece of the pie issues need to be resolved. And then I think, you know, it could actually be an economic injection without ruining our quality of life down there.
And if it comes to that, if the legislature passes, the constitutional amendment passes, there is a local option vote, do you expect that you would advocate people to vote for it or against it?
As a parent, I don't believe I'm going to be saying, "Hey, this is the greatest thing for my kids." Okay, I think the quality of life in Galveston can be maintained even without gaming. I am not right now, as I sit here on April 23rd, going to be the cheerleader for gaming in Galveston. Okay, but what I've told people is I'm not a passive-aggressive individual. If you give me my marching orders, then Katie bar the door, we're going to get the best gambling. I think Garnett Coleman said it best. He said on gambling, there's two ways you can look at it. You can either be a trustee or you can be an agent. You know, I don't perceive that I know what's best for everybody, simply because, you know, we're going to have a vote on it anyway. I'm probably going to vote against it because I think it does have, you know, some deleterious effects on the quality of life. You know, the buses, the, you know, the rampage on the infrastructure. But at the same time, I'm not going to dissuade people because this is a very mature argument in Galveston. Everyone's got an opinion. I think we're going to have one last educational push and then let the vote happen. If it passes, as I think it will, then I'm going to be very aggressive about making sure we have the best casino in the state and that it be something that fits within Galveston.
How would you evaluate the outgoing mayor, Lida Ann Thomas's term in office?
Her 6 years, she gets a great grade. The last 2 years, unfortunately, brings it down. Lida Ann is a close friend of mine and a real mentor to me. I was her mayor pro tem during Hurricane Rita. We were at our high water mark at that point. It was the storm that didn't really hit, but when you compared our evacuation to New Orleans only 6 weeks before in Katrina, you know, people thought, well, here's a good example of Galveston having its act together. Unfortunately, Hurricane Ike was pretty much the exact opposite in every way. I mean, starting with the fact that it was a devastating storm. So my heart goes out to Lida Ann. I think she's had a difficult council to work with. There's some individual talent on there, but as a group, it's been a disaster. And this has been real upfront what we've talked about on the stump for this last year. Are you proud of your council? The city is ready to throw them out. Throw them out, which doesn't mean that certain people won't be reelected, but as a team, they have failed. They have failed. So, you know, where does that leave the mayor, you know, in history and her legacy? I think she's done an A-plus job representing our interests in Washington. She's done it all, you know, by herself with the help of some good advisors. And she's brought home the bacon for Galveston. That's just clear. But in terms of those 24 regular meetings during the term of her two-year final term, those meetings have been forgettable and painful to observe.
Okay. And when people go to vote in May, why should they vote for you for mayor?
You know, Charles, I tell people this, two main reasons. One, I'm ready to serve on day one. I've had 6 years' experience on Galveston City Council, but more importantly, 4 years off after I term limited so I could think about it and reflect on what worked and what didn't. I've had experience as mayor pro tem, basically the city's vice president during a very scary run-up to Hurricane Rita. And, you know how to work with the city manager after serving on three different city councils. You know where the little tricks are in the budget. You know how to maximize the will of the staff by being a good leader when you've been on that dais for 6 years. So I'm ready to lead on day one. I think the other reason that I think puts me head and shoulders above my other two main competitors is I'm independent. One of my competitors, one of my opponents, Betty Massey, I have the deepest respect for, but she works for one of the big families there, the Moody, Mary Moody Northern Endowment. All that tells me is she is going to have that hanging over her on some crucial decisions. You know, who's her boss? Danny Weber, dear friend of mine, served with him, but he is very closely affiliated with the police and fire unions. And the collective bargaining contract is coming up in September. These are, as we call them, special interests in Galveston. Joe Jaworski, on the other hand, is self-employed. I'm an attorney and a mediator. You know, I go to a vast, diverse group of, you know, clients to put bread on the table, and I do a good job. So independence, Charles, I think is the most important reason. Independence. I'm going to work hard every day for people in Galveston, and they don't need to worry where my heart is. My heart is with my children and their children and making sure that the stories they tell over the next 20 years are ones of pride.
Okay. Joe Jaworski, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Charles, thanks a lot.